This is Jarunas, welcoming one and all to another in a series of shows entitled Study Sessions on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Today we're in the 13th chapter. 13th chapter is entitled Nature, the Enjoyer, and Consciousness. This is the 17th verse. I'll read the Sanskrit and the English, and after a little music, we'll comment on it. Abhivaktam chabhuteshu vibhaktam ivachashtitam Vuta bharatir chatajkeyam grashishnu prabhavishnu cha. Translation: although the Supersoul appears to be divided among all beings, he is never divided. He is situated as one. Although he is the maintainer of every living entity, it is to be understood that he devours and develops all. We'll be back in a moment. Later on in the 18th and final chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, you'll find the words Ishvara Sarvabhutanam. Ishvara is a word which means the supreme controller, Sarva means all, and Bhutanam means living entities. This means to say Ishvara Sarvabhutanam, that the supreme controller is within all living entities. Previously in this chapter also we had the verse Chetragam Chapi Mamviti Sarva Chetashu Bharata. There are two souls within every body. Just like if you can imagine a tree, and in that tree or on one branch of the tree there are two birds. One bird is compared to the individual soul and the other bird is compared to the supreme soul or God. Now where are those two souls situated? Are they situated in the toes or the ears or the end of the nose? No. Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Hridesh Arjuna Tishtati. Hrida is a word which means heart. Both souls are situated within the region of the heart. The individual soul, part and parcel of the Lord, is Keshaga Satika Bhaga Punasa Tamsakari. Its length and breadth is equivalent to that of 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. Very, very minute. And the dimensions of the Supersoul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, at least in the human body, is roughly equivalent to the size of a thumb. And both of them are in the cavity of the heart. Scientists know that all energy comes from the heart. When the heart pumps blood, that blood is full of corpuscles, and those corpuscles are imbued with the energy which makes the body tick. Now, everyone admits in medical fields that the heart is the source of energy. All energy is coming from the heart. But where the energy from within the heart comes from, that they don't know. Because as soon as you cut open the heart in order to see where the energy is coming from, of course, then you have a dead body. And a dead body does not emanate energy or life. By the time the body is dead, both the soul and the supersoul have departed. And anyway, even if you could see this, if you could get in there while the soul and supersoul were there, you wouldn't be able to see them anyway because they're on the spiritual platform. But scientists have noticed that the source of energy is the heart, and when the heart stops, everything is finished. It's difficult for them to explain why the heart stops, but from the point of view of Bhagavad Gita, we know why this heart stops, because the soul and the supersoul leaves the body. And when the soul and the supersoul leave the body, then the body is only matter. It is stated, dust thou art, from dust you came, and to dust you shall return. This reminds me of a slight joke a little boy was being told by his mother. She was reading from the Bible and mentioning this quote, "From dust you came, dust you are, dust you shall be." So the little boy's eyes opened wide and he said, "Mommy," he said, "there's someone in my bedroom under the bed on the floor." He said, "Could you tell me whether he's coming and going?" I guess a subtle hint that his room should be cleaned more often and vacated of dust. Otherwise, this body is matter. Except for the presence of the soul and the supersoul, the body has no value. You can take the chemicals of this body and sell them for about $13 at the pharmacist shop. The real value of this body is the fact of the soul being within the body, and the value of the soul is the fact that the supersoul is there sanctioning the activities of the soul. The soul can do nothing without the sanction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Upadrash anumantachar varta bhokta maheshwaram. Krishna is situated within the heart as a witness. Once our spiritual master, as a young boy, this is at the turn of the century, was attending class in Scots College in Calcutta, and the English professor there, who was a cleric also, was challenging the idea of reincarnation. Reincarnation means that in this life you suffer for the sins of your previous lives. He said this is a nonsensical concept because if anyone is going to suffer, for instance, the results of previous sinful activities, let's take a criminal for instance, if he has done a crime 5 or 10 years ago, the only way that you can cause him to suffer is by bringing witnesses into the court, having those witnesses testify and prove that he did the act. And then only on the strength of witnesses can you mete out punishment. So he said that if we're to be punished for the deeds of our previous lives, then he said, where are the witnesses? Where are the witnesses to testify and to verify the fact that indeed we did do these things? Similarly, if one is to be rewarded, there also requires to be witnesses to verify that, yes, he did this such and such meritorious thing. So this professor was saying that because there are no witnesses, therefore this disqualifies the idea of reincarnation as a valid theory. But this verse in Bhagavad Gita explains, of course, when Prabhupada at that time was a small boy and somewhat intimidated in class, and he didn't say anything, but the answer is given in Bhagavad Gita, upadrasht anumantacha. It is the Supreme Personality of God Himself who is the witness. Because as we travel through various species of life, as we transmigrate from one body to another, the well-wishing friend of all living entities, the Supersoul, travels from one body to another along with us. And He witnesses, and He takes note of what our desires are, and He fulfills them. Whatever desires remain unfulfilled through the present body which we have, at the time of death, karmana deva netrana jantu deho papataye. We, the spirit soul, at the time of leaving this body, is injected into the womb of a mother through the semen of the father, and the body that he receives, the species of life that he takes his birth in, is just that species of life. It is just that particular type of body which is suited to fulfill his desires of the previous life. He himself may have forgotten what those desires are, just like a criminal may have forgotten the deed that he did. He himself may have genuinely forgotten it. But the witnesses don't forget, and they remind the court. Or maybe the benefactor has forgotten the good deed that he did. But the witnesses, they remember, and they also remind the court so that suitable reward is meted out. Similarly, we may not remember the activities of our previous lives. In fact, we're certain not to remember the activities of our previous lives. Although, there are instances. I think some scientists now, parapsychologists, are estimating that about 1 person in 10 has some vivid recollections of their previous lives. And they're doing work with hypnotic regression, which tends to bring the memories of our previous lives a little bit more to the forefront of consciousness so that people can remember them. But generally speaking, it's true to say that we don't remember our previous lives. And there's good reason for that too. Because life is painful. Life is full of suffering. Basically, life is characterized by old age, disease, death and birth. And all these are very painful conditions. If you want to enjoy this material world, you have to forget the aspect of it which inflicts misery upon you. You can't be enthusiastic to enjoy this material world if you are in full awareness that the nature of this material world is miserable. You have to put aside the basic ingredient of this material world, which is misery, in order to enjoy. One can only enjoy by becoming oblivious of reality, in fact. So we don't remember what we've done in our previous lives, because our previous life, of course, there were times when we were happy. That's a fact. There were times in youthhood and first love and all like that. But if you look at any one lifetime as a whole, no matter how successful it was in certain areas, ultimately it ends in defeat. Parabhavashtavada bodhijato yavagna jidanshu arjatatvam. Especially if one in the human form of life makes no inquiry as to the nature of the absolute truth, it is said that no matter how successful he is, even he rises to become the President of the United States, ultimately at the time of death his life is a failure. His life is a failure at the time of death because he neglects to think of, to bring the remembrance or recollection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead into his consciousness, and so therefore no one can say what his next birth will be. Would you say that President Kennedy had a successful life? Of course we would say he had a successful life up until the time of his assassination. But certainly his assassination, a bullet in the head, is not the way that we would normally expect a successful life to end. There are milestones in our life which we can call successes, but to the degree that we all die, and to the degree that we all die in ignorance, and to the degree that we don't know what type of birth we're going to take in the next life, we can say that everybody's life is a failure. And, of course, whether we want to be very diligent about advancing materially and forgetting God, or whether those few of us who want to remember God, the facility for that is given by the Supreme Personality of God Himself. Krishna is situated within the heart of every living being. We can't do anything without the sanction of the Super Soul. Just picture yourself as a passenger in a car. As a passenger, you are simply willing. You're not doing anything, but you're just willing. You're willing. Let's go fast, straight ahead. And the driver follows your order. He senses what it is you want. The Super Soul within the heart senses what it is we want. I'll give you an example. Take a flower. You don't necessarily have to touch the flower in order to grasp the essence of it. You can be 3 or even 10 feet away from a flower, but by inhaling its fragrance, you can know what the essence, or at least the aroma of that flower is. Similarly, the Super Soul, because he's situated right alongside the soul in the heart, he knows exactly what are the desires of the living entity. He picks up on them just as our nostrils pick up an aroma from a flower, even though that flower may be at some distant place. So we're sitting in this passenger seat and we're desiring, go left, go right, go fast, go slow, stop here, go here. And the Super Soul is compared to the driver. It is he who is really doing everything. We can't even lift a finger without the sanction of the Super Soul. And indeed, there are many people who can't talk properly, who can't walk properly, who can't literally even lift a finger. Why is that? It means there is some impiety in their background for which they're suffering at the present moment. And, of course, they recognize that the cause of my present suffering is some impiety in the past, then they can take their own future destiny in their own hands and act in such a way in the present that they don't have to incur any sinful reactions in the future. Sometimes people think that it is altogether too hard-hearted, that there is altogether too much of a lack of compassion when we say that invalidity or disabilities or deformities are due to some thing that that person has done in his previous life. But that is not at all the case. That is not all the case, because which would you rather have the person do? Go on suffering in ignorance? Because as long as we act in ignorance, You see what I mean? As long as we cause suffering, then suffering will boomerang back on us as an effect in the future. So would you, out of a false, phony sense of compassion, not care to inform a person that their present suffering is due to their previous actions? Would you have them go on suffering just because you don't want to call a spade a spade? If a doctor has a seriously ill patient, is it the doctor's business to flatter the patient, or is it his job to tell him the truth? After all, that's what the doctor's paid for. Similarly, he was actually has the welfare of his patient in mind. He will tell him the truth, even if the truth appears a little painful, that, my dear sir, your present debility is a result of a previous action. This is a real exercise of compassion. And you can further inform him that as your present condition is a result of your previous acts, your future, your next birth, will be a result of your present acts. Therefore, if you act in a very, very pure way, a nonviolent way, a peaceful way, a philosophical way, if you align yourself with the laws of nature and the laws of God, you can practically eliminate suffering from your future. And ultimately, you can go back to the kingdom of God, of course, where there's no even tinge of suffering. Now, if he's suffering a deformity because of his future bad karma, and if he, by doing good deeds, can assure of himself a beautiful body without deformities in the next life, then it also stands to reason that whatever assistance I can give to him, whatever philanthropic, altruistic work I can do, whatever service I can render to him, whatever help I can give him, that will accrue for me good karma, so that I will enjoy the result of that in my future life. So from practically any angle of vision that you want to look at it, it is not at all incompassionate. It is the essence of compassion, because it is ultimately in one's own self-interest to serve other people and to accrue good karma. But whatever activities that we do, they have to be sanctioned by the Supersoul. If we act impiously, the Supersoul can withdraw his sanction, even that we're not able to tie our own shoe. We want to act. Some of us want to act. We have all kinds of desires. Every one of the 8,400,000 species of life corresponds to a rough set of desires. The bird is flying, the mole is burrowing underneath the earth, the fish is swimming, the pig is having sex, the bear is sleeping. Each body corresponds or is rewarded to the living entity as a result of the desires which he has had in his previous life. And each person is totally convinced that he is this body. The armadillo thinks he's an armadillo. The elephant thinks he's an elephant. And in the human species of life, although the potential is there to understand that I'm not this body, I'm a spirit soul, unfortunately, 99.999% of the people have not had the opportunity or the inclination to develop that potential. So therefore, the same consciousness which prevails in the animal species, that of total ignorance of any self above the body, prevails in human society nowadays. And although it may be painful to hear it, based on this sequence of logic, we have to say that we're living in an animal society. A society in which self-knowledge is practically non-existent. And by that same token, if you go to a human being and ask him what he is, he will tell you what he is in terms of his body. He will define himself in terms of the outer covering and not the inner self. I am black, I'm white, I'm Christian, I'm Hindu, I'm Muslim or Jew. This is also a tribute to the Supersoul. He is guiding us, directing us from within the heart. If we don't want to act as a God-conscious person, but instead our desire is to act as a Central American guerrilla leader liberator, or as a Maoist, or as a doctor, or a lawyer, or as a Republican, or a Democrat, or a man, or a woman, he gives such expert acting directions. He directs us so expertly from within that we get into that role so much that we really forget who we are. Imagine a Hollywood director who can get his actors so much into the roles that they're playing that they forget that they're Rock Hudson or Doris Day, and they totally identify with the role that they're playing. So much so that after the day's shooting, they don't even know. They don't even know where their car is parked. They don't even know where their home is. They don't know how to get there. That's our position. Because of our desire, we're begging the Lord, let me identify with this or that body. He fulfills that desire to such an extent of perfection that we totally forget and are oblivious of our own spiritual self, of the fact that we originally come from the spiritual world, that the vehicle for getting back there is to chant the holy names of the God, and we've totally forgotten the direction to take also. As the Supreme Personality of God is the cause of forgetfulness, He is also the cause of remembrance. So if some or other, due to contact with a bona fide spiritual master, we take up again the process of chanting the holy names of God, then we'll find that very quickly, due to the mercy and the benedictions of the Lord within the heart, it will, within a very short period of time, come about that we do, in fact, revive our dormant God consciousness, that we do, in fact, recollect that we're not black, white, Christians, Hindus, Muslim, or Jews, but that we're servants of God. And from that platform, it's very easy to act according to that proper self-identification.
You've been listening to commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Bhagavad Gita is the essence of India's Vedic wisdom and one of the great spiritual and philosophical classics of the world. The ultimate conclusion of the Gita is unconditional loving surrender unto Lord Krishna, which frees one from all sins, bringing one to complete enlightenment and enables one to return to Krishna's eternal spiritual abode.